I'm proud to be a member of this church with Diane. I was a member and the pastor of the Dapto Church of Christ 150 years ago when it first started. So I'm very comfortable in this family. And I tell you what, if you're hanging around on the coast here, you're looking for somewhere where they don't talk religion, they talk faith and affirmation, it's a good place to turn up. That's the commercial. I was driving in my car somewhere and nearly drove it off the road when I heard of the incident at Glen Innes. It almost, you know, when you hear things sometimes and they say this happened and there's a couple of police involved and they were both shot, and I'm kind of thinking Barry's daughter, maybe. Well, couldn't, you know, and then you say, couldn't be someone that we know. Well, it was. And you're all very familiar with that case, covered brilliantly by the local Merc, and Barry's picture is there as the concerned father. I think he's had a Photoshop done on him, actually. Helen looks good. Barry looks sensational. And he is one of the finest ministers that I have to confess my friendship with him. But in America, where he served for many years, built a church over 7,000, he is highly regarded. I know some of you will be watching this television interview all over the world, but particularly at Crossroads Church. We welcome you as part of our family this morning. Helen, will you come down and come on down, as they say, and come and have a chat with me. Let's give her a welcome. I'm sorry Ray Martin's not here, but I'll do my best. I'll do my best. How are you feeling?
Excellent.
You're going to have to speak.
Excellent, no pain. Love in life.
Yeah. Helen, tell us a bit about your early life, because a lot of the family know that you're Pastor McMurtry's daughter, and in your early life, where did you live, and what was it like to be the preacher's kid?
There's an R-rated version, or MA-rated version, and the church version.
Well, give us the MA version.
I grew up in Victoria. I was born in Victoria. We moved up to Wollongong, I think when I was about fourth class. I think being the preacher's kid's got its ups and downs. Sometimes you were treated favourably, which I never liked. I just wanted to be one of the kids that talked in the back of the church and got yelled at like everyone, you know, all the other kids. But it has also had its good side, because I've grown up in the church. And I have seen the wonderful things that my mother and father have done, and to all the wonderful people. I couldn't ask for anything more.
So, yeah, I mean, you've had a tough year. I mean, I loved your mother very much and loved to hear her sing. That's been a tough year for you.
Yeah, Mum died nearly 3 years ago now. It has been very tough on all of us. She was the best woman that I know. And if I could be anything like her, or half like her, I'd be very happy. I lost my faith when Mum died. So it has been very, very tough. We've all taken it differently. And that's sadly where I went with it.
I mean, you can always say to me, it's none of your business, Jay, and that'll be all right, but you were disappointed. You felt God let you down.
Yes, I did. Mum got dementia, and I know that all illnesses are horrible in their own way, but it just wasn't for me. It was just heartbreaking to see my mum like that. At the end, that wasn't my mum. And I just didn't know why God gave that to her. I blamed God for that. And I couldn't understand that at all.
So what about your growing up times? Did you I mean, most people want to be a fire engine or a nurse. Actually, I've never met anybody to want to be a policeman, to be honest with you. Wonder why that is. I don't know. What about you? When did you decide you wanted to be a cop?
Very early. I have always wanted, for as long as I can remember, to be a police officer. I do remember when I told Mum and Dad, they obviously weren't overly impressed by it because of things like this happening. And so they brought Peter Strick over. Some of you will remember Peter Strick.
No, tell us about Peter.
Oh, Peter was the big, you know, big round cop from the 90s. You know, that stereotypical big happy cop from the 90s.
I think we used to call them wallopers in those days.
They had a different legislation back then.
Yes. That's a better way to put it. Yes.
Some of it needs to be brought back, I must say. But he came over. Dad said, can you come over and scare her a bit, scare her out of it?
I can't believe Barry would say that, Pastor McMurtry.
He's very intelligent. So he brought over these old crime scene books, and they were gory, and they were, you know, dead bodies. And I said, yes, I can't wait to join. So it backfired on the intelligent man. So I joined when I was older. I joined when I was 28.
Yeah, so that's from 12 to 28, that's putting your dream on hold. Mm-hmm. What happened between those years?
I grew up. I got some life experience. I travelled. I think all those things, especially the life experience, is very important when you are a police officer. You can relate to a broader range of people. And I know at 19, when you can actually graduate and be a police officer, I wouldn't have survived. I wouldn't have managed with seeing horrible things happen to people and what people do to people. It does damage you. There's so many police officers I know who are suffering mentally because of what you have to deal with. Not just the people who have died, it's the aggression that you get from the public these days. Constantly being, you know, complained about, being recorded, being, you know, that aggression that people come up to you with, it does damage you. And, you know, not to take away from the horrible things you have to see, I was definitely not ready at 19 to deal with all of that.
So in between time, did you ever, what were the real jobs you had? Give us an idea of what you did to help you grow up.
I did travel. I moved over to Wales when I was 19. I lived there for 2 years. And then Mum and Dad moved to America, so I went and couch surfed with them for another couple of years. All of those things. I worked in retail. I did a course in with Teen Challenge to understand alcoholism. The job I worked at in Wales was raising money for alcohol and drug addicted young men. So I did actually associate with those young men. I've got two brothers. That teaches me a lot. retail, just secretarial, you know, just living, going out and having a drink myself. That teaches you a bit. Great, you know, you grow up, you know, getting your bills.
So where did you graduate and then where did you go?
I graduated in August 2002. And I went to Leichhardt Local Area Command, what was called the Local Area Commands back then, which looks after Glebe and Balmain, Leichhardt, that inner city area. It was great. The best, I stayed there for 5 years. It was the best 5 years of my career. Just action and variety, and more so it's the people you work with. I know Matt mentioned it. It is that police family. And it is true. I've got a number of police officers, ex-police officers here now, and it is a true family. When something bad happens, they are there for you. And that, above all, that's the best thing about the police.
Now, you would think a place like Glen Innes compared to inner city Sydney would be like, what do they call it, tree change. where you go away for the relaxation and the like. What was it like? I mean, I've been through Glen Innes, and I have to confess, having been through Glen Innes a bit over the years, going back to Queensland, the closer I got to Glen Innes, the faster I got out at the other end.
It's a good place to keep going through, only because it is quiet. There is not a lot going on there, which I think, I mean, I transferred there 8 years ago, so I was, you know, getting on, I guess a few years you might say, in the job. I'd done my 5 years in the city, which is action and go, 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 and it has its demands on your life. Then I went to Broken Hill, and that's an interesting place. And then Glen Innes. So I guess I was probably ready, and I'm obviously getting older in age. I was ready to, you know, not have so many wrestles with drunk people on a Friday and Saturday night. So Glen Innes was good for that. It is a great town, crime-wise. I'd still feel happy for Dad to walk down the street on a Friday night at 10 o'clock and not worry about him. It is a good town as far as that's concerned. But it's okay if you just want to keep driving through as well.
All right. So we're at the stage of going to talk about the incident, and we're not going into the detail of that because there's lots of reporting and investigations happening. And I'm here to talk to you, and we're here to listen to you. So you were called out to an incident that I guess would be generalised as a potential domestic violence incident. In general, what is the expectation? I mean, I know a few cops over the years, they hated going to places where family were fighting each other.
Domestics are probably the hardest jobs you do go to because of the emotion involved. And a lot of people, they call us because they just want whatever the situation is to stop. Yes. They don't want anything further to happen. They don't want, you know, apprehended violence orders. They don't want their partner charged. But police have we have to do something to ensure people are safe. That's right. We are responsible for their safety. And that is a continued safety, not just on the night, it is a continued safety. So sometimes, most of the time, we have to do things that the person who called us doesn't necessarily want, especially in the future. And so it is difficult to talk to the people. Like I said, the high emotion, there are normally children there. And so it does make things extremely, extremely difficult. Okay. And normally you are there, you know, immediately, if not while it is occurring. So like, yeah. I said, that emotion is still very high.
And you're either on one side or the other, according to the people who were there. So without going into the incident, you got out of the car with your colleague and you were both shot at and both hit. Take it from there. What did that look like? He was hit first, I think, and then you.
I can't say too much about the incident, obviously, but obviously, as you know, we were both hit. My partner, Sergeant Mark Johnston, and I were both hit. He, the bullet, or the fragment of the bullet, went through his cheek. It went right through his cheek, so he had a gaping hole in his cheek. And then it has hit the left side of my neck, the fragment. It has gone into my throat. It has hit my thyroid cartridge and it has shattered from there.
It was a cartridge that, the word isn't disintegrate, but when it hits a solid, and I think in your case it was a cartilage, it sort of, the fragments went everywhere, and you had a lot and you still got some.
I still have at least 20 pieces still in my neck. I have had a number of follow-up visits at the Gold Coast University Hospital, and they are going to leave those pieces in there. The risk of operating is, you know, and causing further damage is higher than, you know, it is higher than leaving them in there and just seeing how they go.
So there you are, hit by a bullet. I assume you went down. What were you thinking about for you? was it
goodbye? Church,
no, no, no. No, I wasn't going to ask you what words were you using. I wanted to know the fear. Was there fear? Was there, you know?
Strangely, no. Even the kids on the way over here, they said, "Were you screaming?" And I said, "No, I didn't feel pain. I wasn't screaming. I could speak the whole time. I was conscious the whole time. I just remember saying, I think I'm hit. And then I fell. And then I was trying to help the probationary constable that I was with, Sam Petty. She was 4 weeks in the job. She's 22 years old, I think. And all I thought about is, you poor girl having to face this so early. And so, we were together. I was trying to calm her down, trying to still figure out, really, what has just happened? Who else is in trouble? Where is he? What is he doing now? But not able to do anything either. My thoughts basically were on my children and my husband, Gary. I do remember making Sam and Mark listen to me because I thought that I might not be able to speak to them again. And so I got them to remember what I was saying so they could pass the message on to my children and to Gary.
Okay, so at what point did you start to think about your relationship with God? They say there are no atheists in foxholes, by the way. In other words, tough times do give us a bit of a wake-up call.
I think Mrs. Robinson's reading this morning was perfect. That stillness, I just think now I had a stillness. I was not panicked. I was not screaming. I was calm. It is beyond what everybody thinks, that it would be absolute chaos and mayhem and screaming and, you know, blood pissing out. And it wasn't. I could say the P word. I didn't say the F word.
We men understand that.
Yeah. So it truly was not like, I guess, the movies. I had a stillness. I had a job to do. Even though I was down, I had a job to do. I think once I got out of the coma that they put me in and operated on, when I opened my eyes again, my faith came back. A lot of people say, you are lucky, you know, and I don't think that at all. I am not lucky, I am blessed. And I say this all the time, I put it on Facebook. God walked me through that valley. There's no way that this could happen to somebody. And if you were able to see the x-ray of my neck, the amount of pieces that were in there still, and they took pieces out, and the fact that it did not hit anything vital, that is not luck. That is not luck at all. No one can say that. Like I said, I was talking the whole time. I was conscious the whole time. I was back on a full, solid diet a day after I got into the ward, so out of ICU. Nothing. No speech problems, no pain. It is a true miracle from God. And if anyone says lucky, I almost want to punch them. Don't say lucky, Jay.
Well, and it'd be nice if you didn't do that.
I've got a good excuse at the moment, though, haven't I?
Absolutely. Yeah. So the future. You wouldn't be out of whack if you said, you know what, Dad told me it was a dangerous job and Mum told me that too. Now it's dangerous more than I wanted. It's something I don't want to do again. That kind of, and in the police force, okay, it's wonderful the variety of things you can get to do there. But what's your future? You want to stay in the force?
I don't know. I can say yes, physically I'm fine, but you get mental issues. I have mental hurdles now. And I can't say that it is only from this incident because, like I said, being a police officer, it affects you. So, you know, I obviously had my issues to begin with, as all police officers do. You become very isolated from the public because you don't see much good of the public. And this has obviously made it worse. So I do have those mental hurdles. As good as I look on the outside, there's a lot going on inside. I was not ready to give up my job. No way. I wanted to be a police officer until I retired. And I guess the only upset I have about this matter, I don't have any anger or animosity against the man who did this. He obviously was not in the right frame of mind, in my mind. He's making me make a choice that I was not ready to make. And that is my only upset. I see the police as the best job in the world. I truly do. It is a fantastic job. If you put the effort in and you truly care for your community, it is the best job in the world. But whether I can do that, I don't think I will ever be able to be fully operational again.
Do you think, though, that God has, trying to think of a nice way to say this, given you a chance and a nudge?
Yes, I truly think so. Before this happened, I was in a hole. I was very isolated from my friends, from my family. Things with Gary were all right, but nothing like they are now. It has changed my life, almost to the point where I sort of go, I wish other people that I see who are just living the ho-hum and not happy, I wish something life-changing could happen to them so they can get their life back and their love back. I think that, yes, God did this to me for a number of reasons, to get me back to who I was, I think, before I joined the police. Get me back to my family, get me back to my friends, get me back to who Dad knew. And in the police, yes, I am hoping that this changes the police, some of the things that happen in the police, in a very positive way. And I hope I can, if I'm able to go back, I hope that I can do that.
Helen, thank you for spending the time with us today and we get a chance to talk to her. And if you had a special concern, maybe over a sandwich or something, go up and seek her wisdom, and she's got plenty. Let me have a prayer with you. Can we do that? We stand up? Yes, you can say three more things.
Three. Well, it involves three things, I guess.
Yes.
I would like to thank everybody for their prayers, their love and their support. I always say that God walked me through the valley, but my family, my friends, even unknown people, your prayers, your support and your love brought me home. It really did.
Thank you. Yeah. Let's stand and have a prayer. You may, give her a hand. A loving God, we thank you for being available to us 24 hours a day. Not like the police force to protect us, but a loving, caring God who wants the best for us. We pray and thank you for this wonderful woman. Barry described the situation as miraculous, and she is your miracle woman, and we thank you for her. We thank you for her colleagues, not just here in localities, but around the world. People who 24 hours a day are on call to help people. Help us to be generous in our praise and our consideration of the people we call the cops. And help us to be in prayer and aware of the things they do every day that put them at risk. Thank you for being here with us this morning. Touch our hearts. Call us to action. Call us to prayer. Call us to get involved with people. And call us to thank you for delivering this wonderful woman back into our care, in Jesus' name. Amen. Thank you.